combs, but the combs ran from like a half inch in size doll combs to regular adult size combs, all in pink. And then there'd be an area of, I don't know, probably women, anything, women's razors, or what else do you remember that you had a lot of?
There are lots of toys, like children's toys and dog toys. And then there's also things like guns and sex toys. And I just collected anything that I found in pink plastic and just arranged them all.
Useful items and toy items, right?
Yeah.
Functional items, you know, that we use, women use. And
but kind of throwaway sorts of things, like things that are not considered, you know, valuable.
Right. Yeah. So when I saw that, I just realized, like, how dumb being a girl is. That's all I can say. I mean, I kind of knew that, but I was like, wow, this is a really powerful statement on how society views women. And it really, like, there were so many things about it that stuck with me, that message, but also just the obsessiveness of the artist was, like, overwhelming. And it had so many levels to me, like society, what society makes, what we make for girls, what we make in, like, just, there's so, it was, you can see it moved me. I mean, I'm just going to say that, right? Anyway, so Portia is, after, this is like, I never thought I would actually be sitting in the room with Portia. This is 1994, but I was fortunate enough to be able to see her, run into her and ask her. And I was amazed because she said yes right away to being on the show. So I had that really good fortune. But, and the show that I ran into her is still up and you can go see it. And it's just a really, really fabulous show that's up right now. And honestly, you know, I always like try to talk about that artist, you know, the art to me, having art accessible to you guys, you people that don't even give a shit about art maybe, or, you know, or music people, or maybe even art people. This stuff's really just accessible and fun and interesting and impactful. All of the work. Portia's piece is a star in this show, but you should all go see it. So it's at the Flag Store Art, Flag Art Foundation, which is on 545 West 25th Street. It's up through August 17th. The name of the show is Dime Store Alchemy, and it's curated by Jonathan Ryder and has so many great, very famous artists in it as well, like Sophie Call. We like her. Lots of people. Also, upstairs is another one of my famous artists, somebody who's actually been on the show before, Jennifer Gang. Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and anyway, Rachel, thank you for helping us here. We had a little bit of a late start because we had a technical mix-up, but everything's really good. So, anyway, I'm just going to really get down to business. It's Dr. Lisa on Radio Free Brooklyn on Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. Radio Free Brooklyn is the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere. Please check us out at radiofreebrooklyn.org. Most importantly, I'm going to get right down to it. Okay, so my guest today is John Reed. John Reed is somebody I really enjoy at this station. Enjoy him immensely. He's somebody I identify with. He's a rare bird because he's smart and he's also able to articulate his feelings and thoughts in a way that, oh, God, I'm going to get in trouble for this, but it isn't always common in the male. All right? It's a very appealing quality. He's a great guy. He's a teacher, teaches English at a very nice school. He is a former you know, really, really like real deal musician, traveled, been on the road, done all that. And he's in the middle of writing a novel, which I think sounds really fascinating. And I personally have high hopes for it. Personally, I'm not full of shit. So, but the reason he's here is because after 3.5 years, he decided his number one show. Okay. I mean, I would die to have the, last 3.5 years of leaderboards of his show, Race to the Bottom. It's every Saturday from 10 to 11. And he's done an amazing job and he's quitting. And I personally am very upset. And I know he's got a lot of listeners that are upset. And I'm, you know, I'm Dr. Lisa. I'm not pulling any punches. And I'm going to fucking find out for us why the hell he's quitting. John, I'm very upset. I'm sorry I'm yelling, but, you know, I mean, I'm very, very upset. So anyway, you are quitting. There's no question about it. How are you feeling? Like, what's going on with you right now, right in the moment?
I'm feeling good. You make me laugh. So that's always good. It's good to be back. I haven't been in this studio for a few weeks. I did my last live show like 3 weeks ago here, which was bittersweet. And then I did a couple pre-records to kind of round out the arc of the 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry that you're upset that
personally.
Personally upset that I'm leaving.
I am.
But it just felt like, you ever just feel something in your heart that you're just like, I have to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, I respect your decision. I'm just personally upset. And also, quite honestly, your show was doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Very well. And were you proud? Did you know that? Did you internalize that?
I am not going to say that I didn't look at the leaderboards and you know.
Who doesn't? Come on. That's all the feedback. We don't get a lot. Guys, listen, we don't get a lot of feedback on this, which I'm glad. You know, we don't need to be competitive and all that, mm-hmm. get caught up in bullshit. But we don't. That's the only feedback we really know. We don't get a lot of numbers.
No, I was competitive when my show dropped down. You know, I got used to it being in the top one or two, you know, and when I... There was some times where it would drop down, and it stung. I'm a competitive person.
Of course you are.
As much as I, you know.
No, we're all competitive. There's nothing. You got to be competitive, or you'll just sit in your room and rot. It's bad not to be at all competitive, or not to be competitive is not a dirty word.
Yeah, but I guess to answer even the you know, when my show was in the on the top of the leaderboards, it still wasn't enough for me.
No. What do you mean? Did you take pride in it, or did you were like, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything?
No, I was proud of it, but it's still like, I don't know. It still wasn't, what I needed, I guess, you know?
Uh-huh.
I needed, like, if I did a show and I didn't get enough people, like texting me afterwards saying that it was a great show, I would feel, you know, bereft.
Here's the thing. This is what I find really interesting. This is what I'm curious about, really. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious because I don't think I ever, maybe once or twice, I've been doing a show 7 years.
Uh-huh.
I never get a text. I don't get any feedback. I don't get callers. Mm-hmm. I don't think people are listening. I mean, like, So what I guess I'm trying to understand is, are we like kind of the same? It's just that we're operating in different levels. Like you've done well, you've gotten this feedback, and then you want to get more, mm-hmm. and I want to get more, but it's like you already started at the top and that's as far as you can go. Do you think you are actually, by the numbers, your show is more successful than mine, but that because we, you know, you didn't accelerate as much as you would have liked, that you wound up being just as dissatisfied as I would have been, or anybody would.
I think I was more dissatisfied because I stopped doing it, and you've been doing it in a way. You win because you're still doing it. I you know, it's kind of like I had a Twitter account where I had like a few thousand followers, but I deleted it because I was mad. This was in like 2016, 17. I was mad that it was basically Trump's website. You know, he would just tweet all the time and it was like his. And I was just like, fuck this. I'm deleting my Twitter account. Like I was going to like stick one to Trump by deleting my Twitter account, which, you know, was pretty stupid too, because now I have a Twitter account with like 40 people on there, and like you know.
So that sounds self-destructive.
I think.
Do you think it was?
I think in a way it was, but I was also like, you know, who cares? Maybe the who cares thing is self-destructive.
So I'm thinking a couple of things. One is, I want to ask you why you didn't do more promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that, you know, you talked about, this is cheating, folks. Like before, right before we got on the air, we talked about how you had really gone whole hog for your music career, and that didn't turn out the way as successful as you thought of. And it informs your, you know, that was a long time ago, I guess, you know, or a while ago. You're matured since then, obviously, but that you are sort of hesitant about going all in on another creative project after that experience. So there's two things that I'm thinking about is, one is, I did want to ask you, even before we got here, why, you know, I put so much more work into promoting my, you put no work into promoting your show.
I put stuff up on the social media.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Very little.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
But I also
I sound so awful and attacking.
No, it's fine.
I'm sort of kidding. I'm just.
But even if I did, like, I felt like I was just, it goes back to my PTSD about my music thing. Because, like, with my music career and with Race to the Bottom, it basically felt, in a lot of ways, like I was badgering my friends and family to listen to either my music or listen to my radio show. I felt like I was like a kid, like doing like a performance in the living room.
Yeah,
like,
I understand what you mean.
And being like, watch me. Okay, now watch me do this. You know, mom, dad.
No, I understand.
You know, friends
that.
Who you have over. But what? And it's like, I kind of felt like at a point, the true test of like me being a successful musician or me having a successful radio show was to have strangers listen to my stuff.
Every performer everybody that needs an audience, every creative person that needs an audience feels that way.
Yeah. I wanted, and it felt like I was just, you know, I was super thankful for people who tuned into my radio show, but I felt like it was mostly just my friends, family, and acquaintances that were tuning in, and I hadn't, there wasn't a way. So even promoting it just felt like, you know, how am I going to, it's like my social media reach is just going to be, you know. And then so I had guests on, and like, and I built up somewhat of a community around the show through having guests, and I had a cool, like 10 or 15 guests that I would cycle through, and that was, you know, and like friends of the show and stuff, which was cool. But, you know, at some point it just felt kind of like it had gone, like we were talking before.
Yeah.
It had gone as far as it possibly could.
You know what I'm interested in here, John? What I'm interested in, and I know you're writing a book, I'm interested in making sure that you don't repeat these patterns.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And like the thing that I didn't, you know, I obviously never heard that about that you deleting your Twitter account, but that's not appreciating that, you know, that's, you didn't appreciate, I think you had a lot of 3,000s a lot, you know, and you didn't appreciate that somehow.
And also like thinking ahead to like,
they'd all be your listeners.
Yeah. I could have promoted
or buying your books.
Yeah.
Exactly. My point.
Yeah, so,
but also another thing that you're bringing up now that I find really interesting is that, as a creative person, you think of your audience, like I never invite the people. I expect the people I know not to show up for anything.
Yeah. Do you have people who you are friends or family or acquaintances with who you know they've known that you had to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. They've known it for years and they've still never tuned in.
Yeah, I don't think my brother's ever heard it.
Yeah.
And I don't bring it up.
Yeah.
I don't care really. I don't. Honestly do not care if my brother ever listens to it. Or my cousin or yeah, any of my friends. I mean, and I get very little feedback on it, really. I mean, occasionally I'm shocked. Somebody, I heard that was such a great show. But I don't think, this is what I'm trying to understand. The way that I think about my creative projects is I don't expect anyone, you know, and this is part of my childhood too.
Yeah.
I don't expect anyone I know personally to give a fuck about anything I do.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that and I know that.
Yeah.
And if somebody gives a fuck, it's always a mystery and a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But were you supported in your projects by your family?
Yeah. My parents listened to every Race to the Bottom.
Okay. There's a problem there.
Yeah.
That's a problem, John.
Yeah.
So, because tell me to shut up. I'm just speaking.
Yeah.
You know, I have no training or credit. You know,
yeah.
But to me, it seems like that perhaps there's a fear because the real scary thing is people who don't know you at all listening. Or paying attention. We're not talking even about the radio show. We're talking about your creative work.
No, I want them to. I think the thing is, if I'm being totally honest, I feel and this would sound shitty, but I feel like I have a really high sense of self-confidence with my art, and when it isn't successful, I feel betrayed, and I feel super pissed off at the world, and I hate that feeling. I hate that about myself, and I hate feeling that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I give up. I give in. You all don't know what you're missing. I'm out.
So you can't tolerate that feeling. And you're not alone. We all feel that way it's not even, I mean, it's confidence. You have to have enough confidence to fucking do the work. Mm-hmm. So that is also, here's something, and I struggle with this too, but it sounds like you're also looking for outside reinforcement as part of I try to tell myself I like doing this. Am I enjoying doing this? And if no one's paying attention, then, like, if no one's listening to this show, That's okay, because yeah. I'm having a blast with you.
I felt like that and told myself that. And I guess after 3.5 years, when it stopped feeling fun and that bottom dropped out of it, I was like, okay, then I have to stop. Because if I'm not getting the feedback that I want and it stopped feeling fun, then
I agree. Agree. I'm not saying that, but I'm wondering like if there's some feelings from your music career you haven't talked about them in therapy. Have you worked through, maybe you haven't worked through them and those. See, because performing live, like being in a band, did you front the band? I forget. Yeah. And you wrote the songs and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like fronting a band and writing the songs and performing live is a huge emotional risk.
Yeah.
Like just so much bigger than almost anything else you could do.
And I stopped because I wanted to put all, I think we talked about this when I had you on my show, but to put all my eggs in the musical basket and to prove to myself in the world that I knew that it could happen, I didn't get a real job. I delivered pizzas at Pizza Hut for a decade.
Right.
And put my life on hold, waiting for that phone call, waiting for, you know, the agent to call, the tour manager, you've got the big break, and the call never came. The closest that it came is, I don't know if I told you this, but on my old Twitter account, I used to, I was a big NPR person, and I would deliver pizzas. And on the weekends, they had Weekend All Things Considered with Guy Raz. And I hated his voice. And I would, week after week, I would tweet, you know, I would trash him and his voice and how bad he was as a host on Weekend All Things Considered. I thought it was a really funny thing to, like, obsess about. And then like after doing it for like a year and a half, 2 years, I got an email from Guy Raz, and he said, a friend alerted me to your tweets, I'm sorry you don't like the show, but I love your music, I would like to have you on All Things Considered.
That's so fabulous.
And I was on All Things Considered, and they did a whole feature about about my tweets, and then about my music, and about my album.
That.
And you know, that weekend, like I had like thousands of listens, and people bought the record. That was the closest that I came to stardom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that dried up, and I was delivering pizzas, and then I gave away, and then I said, you know what? Fuck this. And I gave away all my instruments to friends, and I didn't like touch a guitar or a piano for years.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Was the giving away of all that's, you know, the giving up, let's call it.
Yeah.
Was that triggered by by All Things Considered?
No, it was about a year later, but I just couldn't. I would like see. I started to hate music. I started
I could
to
see that. I mean, I can it, see why
it was like a you know,
a noose around
your
neck.
Yeah,
right?
And I was like, I can't see that you know, guitar there in the corner anymore. I can't see that keyboard. I need it out. And I'm gonna. And then I switched to writing, and I went back to school and I got a creative writing degree, and
You met a wonderful woman.
Mm-hmm.
And your life is pretty decent, right?
Yeah,
you've got a nice life. You got a good job, a wonderful partner.
Yeah.
You know, it worked out. It worked out okay.
Yeah.
So we're not, you know, I mean, I want you guys to know that, though.
Yeah.
It worked. This guy, like, is motivated, and John is motivated, and look what being motivated is 90% of it, if you ask me, 90% of any battle.
Yeah.
So, but here, Here's what I'm curious about is that the all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You're a musician. You had your music, let's call it your music development, music mm-hmm. career, whatever, your music life. You put the rest of your life and on hold for a pot of gold at the end.
Yeah.
And you know that, right? Yeah. I mean, so that sounds like something a young man might do, a very ambitious young man. Yeah. And I kind of love that, but it's very idealistic,
you know? Yeah. I'm very all or nothing. Like with drinking, like I either drink a lot or I like don't drink at all.
So you mean now?
Yeah.
Do you not drink? Or you mean like if you go out?
I haven't been drinking. Yeah.
If you go out, you have like 10 drinks and that's like once a month or something or.
Kind of, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I like that all at one time.
Or food or, you know, I like work out every day or I don't. Or I go through months where I don't go to the gym at all.
Oh, so this is a much bigger issue than your music work or any of your work.
Yeah.
So do you just kind of like think that's the way you are and you cope with that? I mean, there's some great things like that. Have you talked about that?
My wife balances me out a lot. You know, she helps break that all or nothing kind of thing.
You mean,
and then depression is all or nothing. Anxiety is all or nothing. I think a lot of my, and idealistic stuff, you know?
Yeah.
All or nothing.
Yeah.
For sure. But I guess to go back to the one thing I know is a constant is that I'm always going to be doing something creative. So when I gave away all my musical instruments, I threw myself into going back to school and writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I threw myself into like doing improv, and going to classes at UCB and cooking and becoming a chef. And then that stopped. And I threw myself, I guess, with grad school. That was the one time that was like all I could do was grad school and teaching. But basically, what I'm saying is, you know, I stopped the radio show and now I write every day. You know, mm-hmm. so there's always going to be some creative.
Mm-hmm.
outlet that I'm, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to put everything into.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you think maybe it's just not fun unless you're going all in?
I guess so.
Or like what I'm trying to understand is I can see the positive side of that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
We've identified the difficult side.
Yeah.
So You've thought about this, I'm sure, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that just the way you are and that's cool?
I guess so. I mean, I can't.
Or you don't feel like you can control it? Do you feel like it's biological? Like,
And when you asked why, I just felt it in my heart. Like I have to follow that more than anything. You know, if my heart's not in it,
mm-hmm.
You know. I think, you know, I guess ideally I would love to have, you know, a dream would be to have a show like Race to the Bottom where I had, you know, a couple people helping me do the show and a listenership where there was where I could do special shows and do research and do, you know, like to do it on the level, like to take, I guess to find that next level. Year. It wasn't feasible to make happen.
Right.
But I was working for hours, you know, I think I told you off before we got on air that, you know, I made a new show every week.
And how many?
170.
No, I know. No, but I mean, how much time did you prep for the show?
Throughout I was always taking notes. Whenever a thought, I had a notes app, and then I would put the notes together, and I would divide it into things. I would make a mashup for each show, which took, you know, 2 or 3 hours. I would write a monologue. I would get my guest. I would, you know.
So each show was kind of like your whole creative project.
Yeah, each right. I would make try to make like art out of the week.
I see.
You know, right. And I did politics right. And did like a whole month on the mayoral elections, and you know.
So that was your whole psyche.
It was everything, yeah.
And that is a lot for a show.
Yeah.
A show that's on a nonprofit radio station.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What you want would probably have to be on a more commercial station.
Probably, but what I would want to do would probably be too weird for like NPR or that commercial, you know.
Right.
It's too all over the place. Like I would want to be able to do like a, you know, a freestyle show if I wanted to, or do, you know, I wouldn't want it to be like all tidy like NPR, so boring and
so everything you're saying is really sensible and pragmatic to me. The only thing is like that self-destructive. I think it's self-destructive, like to destroy what you make.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I had boxes of CDs and of records that I made, and I threw them in the dumpster.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about all that now? Do you think like...
I mean, I understand why I did it, and I wouldn't want those boxes of CDs. It was also like, no one's, you know, people wouldn't even use these for coffee coasters.
No, they're useless now.
You know?
Right.
So in a way, it felt good. It felt, great to give away...
Liberating.
You know, to give away my musical instruments or to quit Race to the Bottom. Like... In a way, it's, I guess, self-destructive, but also, like, I don't know. Like, what's the thing? Like, out of destruction comes creation,
yeah,
kind of?
Yeah, and I don't think it's self-destructive. I think, like, burning your Twitter account because of some asshole is,
yeah.
Like, that you could have used.
But yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so you're working on your book.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess I need to practice like my elevator pitch.
Are you excited about it?
I am.
And yeah. So like, have you been able to transfer like the missing of the show to the excitement about the book?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I get up every day and work on the book, and I'm like a kid at a candy store.
You're loving it.
I love it. Yeah.
That's so great.
One thing that I think would be interesting to talk with you about is. So it's autobiographical. It's, I guess, what they would call like autofiction. They call like like Nausgaard or these people that write these books where it's like it's them, but it's fiction.
Right,
you know?
Right. They make
but
up.
Real people's, you know, and it's some of it's real events, and I have real people's names in there. You know, it like straddles the line between memoir and fiction. Mary Carr or these people who just, you know, where it's like. But it's interesting to also think ahead to like letting people who are in the book read it and to figure out like if they would be okay with these stories being told, you know, about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
have you done that then?
I let one of my best friends read the parts, or some of the parts that he's in, and I was nervous about that, you know. But there's a lot of people, and there's people I haven't talked to for 20 years who are in the book.
Oh, so before and folks, he said he's on the 7th. This book is done. It's like a almost 400 page book. I mean, the book is, folks, the book is like. Getting to the point like he's going to have it done in six. You potentially could be having it ready to send to a agent or whatever in 6 weeks.
My goal is to have it finished. Yeah. In 6 weeks. I've been working on it for 2 years.
Yeah, steadily.
Yeah.
So if they don't say, okay, is that going to be an option? Like, is that something you're going to have to deal with that you haven't dealt with? Or is it a problem to sending the book out? Can you send the book out with them? Like,
I'm not totally sure what the... I'm sure that you know a publisher or whoever would go through that the like legal stuff and the logistics. you know, so a lot of names I've already changed. I don't know how much more I would need to like fictionalize if people like the biggest thing is the, you know, it's about this relationship that I was in
with a woman, a romantic relationship in college.
Yeah. Right? And I haven't,
she doesn't know.
I haven't spoken to her basically since we broke up 20 years ago.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Ooh, I want to be there when you call her.
So I don't know
in her house.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the kind of thing where I will need to have her read it, contact her out of the blue and say, I want you to read this before, you know. And also, who even knows if it's going to get to this stage, because it might just be unpublished and on my computer. But if it got to this stage,
right, you'd have to.
I guess I'd have to ask her.
And it's in the back of your mind while you're writing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully not while I'm writing it.
No, but you've been writing it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it comes up in your, it's in there. It's baked, not in the book, not in the actual process of making the book, but it's in your life. The book is a part of your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So where does she live? Like,
I think she lives in like either Kentucky or Ohio.
So not somebody you're going to run into on the street.
No.
And
she's friends with friends, but I'm not social media contacts with her.
So like, would you be afraid of a lawsuit, or would you just be afraid of embarrassing, you know, making her uncomfortable, or like if I said, okay, I'm going to publish your book, I got my friend at Simon & Schuster.
Yeah.
Let's go. What would you?
I don't know the legal logistics. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want a lawsuit, but also I kind of wish there was a way to do it without having to contact her. Like, I feel like that, as even though I'm writing about that, I'm writing it almost as fiction. So I don't really want to contact this person. I'm
right.
In a
you don't
happy
want
marriage
to have any reality. Yeah.
I want her to live her life. And, but by the same token, I have like specifics about her life that are in the book. And if she read it, she would.
Yeah,
no.
You could also, I mean, if you had to, you could probably, like, if somebody's like, okay, but you got to change this from, you know, fishing to, you know, water skiing. I mean, I'm sure there are ways. But it's a personal issue. What is your wife? You've talked to your wife about this?
Because
she kind of knows you that way. Like, what's her take on it?
She's read some of it. And
have you talked to her about, like, do you think I should get in touch with so-and-so?
Not specifically about this, but just more in general about like getting in touch with people.
Because, you know, that is a conflict I think anybody would have. And I think all writers probably have that. And that would be a good, interesting question for a writer who's been through that. But I also think that by the time it gets to the point where it's going to be published, that there'll be so many other factors involved that will seem like much more of a detail. Right now, it seems front and center.
Yeah.
But I think your perspective will be changed when, you know, I mean, you know, I know that, like, if you get it to an agent or editor, certainly at a publishing company, there's going to be a lot of changes that you're going to be dealing with and, like, worrying about whether you're...
Definitely.
You know,
former
girlfriend finds out.
Yeah. And then I have a worry also with, like what I said about, like, if I could do Race to the Bottom on a different radio station, and I would worry about it changing too much to where I wasn't. I worry about having, you know.
Oh, the book changed.
I worry about having like my vision. Like, if I do find an agent or a publisher, I hope that I find I want to find somebody who sees what I want to do and not change it to, you know, to be fit some vision of some pre-established thing that they want to have it be.
Well, that is something I'm concerned about for you, only in the fact that I'm very cynical about that stuff. As you know, I've mentioned on the show way too many times. I used to be an art director in advertising. Yeah. But as somebody, and even with the work that I, creative work I do now, I mean, you know, for a gallery or something, like, you wind up, I have had to wind up doing some compromises that a lot of really stringent, you know, ethical creative people wouldn't have done to their work, maybe. And, but the thing is that, you know, like I always go by the work is your children. These are my kids. And my kids want to get out in the world. And if they have to wear the outfit that doesn't look good on them, it's still more fun for them to be out there than it is for them to be dressed right. So, and also, I do think part of, like, we're sort of talking about being a fine artist versus being a commercial artist in a certain way. And all are, there are no fine artists anymore that you personally know, because they're all in their, like, caves making whatever they're making. But the way the world is now, I mean, we do have to navigate that. We have to navigate it professionally, where we know where we can evaluate what's going to ruin the thing beyond beyond, you know, what we want in mind, and what is a compromise where it can still exist. What are the boundaries? But we have to be prepared also. Also, you know, a lot of it is you have to be able to negotiate with people and not, I mean, you're practical. Are you practical about that? You're a teacher. So you don't have to deal. Like, I always thought that teachers have all the authority and no one ever bosses them around. But
well, you get bossed around by parents and administrators and my wife's more practical, and I'm glad that I have her in my life. You know, she could definitely help with this kind of stuff if it gets there, as far as, you know. You would hope that you'd find an editor, agent, publisher who you could trust. It's not that I don't want to change anything. If I had a great editor and they saw a better way to do something, I'd be if they were great, I would do all the work that I would jump through any hoop they wanted me to.
Okay, now that to me honestly sounds very idealistic.
Yeah.
I think that you're going to be dealing with people who are going to be putting their fingers in your work and having their own, like, I want it to be this way because I want to be the person who made John. Made this character be this way in the book. They're going to have their own egos. And that's how they got into the job that they had. And I'm feeling protective of you, and I want, and your book. I'm advocating for your book.
Yeah,
really.
So it is it's a negotiation, right? There would be things that they would want me to change, where I would say, "Yeah, I can do that," and then I guess things that they would want me to change, where I would have to draw the line and say that no, that's against the vision that I have for this thing.
Well, I think that sounds nice too. But I think, honestly, this is from all the different projects. This is where my cynicism has landed me, and I'm not right, but it's just where it's landed me, is that I feel like part of getting something out into the world through the gatekeepers is by being able to prove to them that you're willing to play ball. Without being like, okay, whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, if you present, you have a meeting with them and you present that you're, like, wary of them, or only, you know, you're let's say too attached to your work.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they're going to be like, this guy's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
Do you know that too, right? Have you been in that situation? I imagine you have.
I guess
maybe that's why.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I guess what it's making me think of is the music that I played. When people ask me what kind of music I played, it was very difficult for me to
categorize,
you know, which I think was to the detriment of my musical career.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, what I did was such a mix and so idiosyncratic. It had elements of jazz and soul and rock and R&B and Latin mm-hmm. stuff. And it was just mm-hmm. kind of all over the map. So it was like, I couldn't quickly say that it's this.
Well, you know, this brings me back to thinking about how you're promoting your show. And one of the things that I was thinking about is like when I go to your show page, there's a one sentence bio.
Yeah.
So I think like what I think of is if you want people to feel invested in your show, then you've got to talk them into it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see a willingness mm-hmm. to want to talk people into liking your work.
Yeah.
And do you think people should just know how, I mean, and I'm not, this is not about your work or the quality of your work. This is the world, I'm living in this world, John. Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. This world is like getting worse. The creative work is, TV is a little better than it was. That's it.
Yeah.
But do you see what I'm saying? How do you feel about selling yourself to people?
I'm horrible at it. Yeah.
To your public, to your gatekeepers. And I'm not saying you're horrible there are no judgments here unless I'm making them about myself. So what I'm saying is that
it's something I need to work on.
No, it's something that you're not comfortable with.
Yes.
And so we got 10 minutes. What do you think that's about? Do you want people just to know? Did your parents, like, what happened when you were a kid? Did your parents, were they always varying? Your dad, his dad's a shrink. Mm-hmm. I've met the dad. He's like a classic.
And my
shrink.
Mom's a therapist too.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. You're brought up by two therapists. Yeah. So were you encouraged? And like,
they were totally supportive. It doesn't come from that. I think it's more, I have a very, complicated, relationship to my sense of self, I think, is the issue.
Uh-huh.
Which I think we talked about last time.
You were on my show.
I was on the show. You know, I have had bouts of kind of like dissociative disorder. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not I have a really weird relationship with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to like talk about who I am or to know who I am specifically, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I guess there's a lot of different things at play.
Right. And I'll link this show when I post it. So you can mm-hmm. find it, people. So, so you feel like you have an obstacle in like putting in defining who you are.
Yeah.
In public. Yeah.
Defining who I am in public and who I am to myself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you get, have you, do you want to do that? Have you tried to get help with that?
Yeah. I mean, I've done therapy and stuff. It's been it's so hard to find a good therapist.
Yeah, I know.
I'll have periods where I really want to get into therapy, and I'll try to find somebody, and I'll see somebody for a couple sessions, and I need somebody really good.
No, but what I was saying is, what I was thinking about is like, okay, so John isn't really going to be able to write his own bio that well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I could probably write, I believe you wouldn't want me to do it, because I'm not that writer, but you could get somebody easily. Yeah. You could get somebody from the radio station to write it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you thought of, you need help with that?
Yeah, I need help. I need help with the presentation.
Yeah,
you know, and with this book, I need like to figure out what the elevator pitch is, because there's so many like Race to the Bottom, like my music, like this book, there's so many facets that, the book is about a relationship. It's also about college. It's also about being an artist. There's also stuff about like mental health and religion and race, mm-hmm. and all this, mm-hmm. you know. I love that of like mixing all these different things.
Yeah.
Up,
and know? I'm anxious. I mean, the book sounds great to me. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
But the thing is that it sounds like you need some help because you don't have those resources of one of the things that it doesn't sound like, it's going to be really tricky to navigate in a commercial situation. Yeah. How much to defend the book and how much to give into it and give into the commercial situation and how and who, you know. I mean, you have obstacles and I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's good to know what they are, so this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking like maybe if there was a group of writers mm-hmm. that you could talk to or work with or become part of. Have you thought, is that something you're comfortable with?
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
I did a writer's group with some people, which was great. It's just so hard to find people who have time, you know? It's the same with getting people to read my book. People, you know, it's a big ask to have somebody read a book. And I've asked people and they say, yeah, I'll totally do it. And then like, they just don't.
No, I know.
You know?
I hear you. But you need professional. We're talking about, we're not talking about the book anymore. We're talking about you as a professional navigating the professional world of publishing for your child, your book.
Yeah.
And you don't have, I mean, quite frankly, being a teacher, I have all the respect for that, but mm-hmm. it's not navigating your personal work.
Yes.
So you don't have a lot of experience, and the experience you have is when you're in charge as running something, in a band.
Yeah.
You're not going to be running something. You're going to be dealing with these other people.
Yeah.
So I think that's your obstacle.
Yeah, and it's scary, you know, I'm definitely intimidated and anxious about finishing the book and then going to this next phase of negotiating all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like we've talked about, I'm worried about my habit of saying, screw this, I'm out. You know, so yeah, it'll
I
be.
Think, yeah, I don't think that's going to go away. I think you need coping skills.
Yeah.
You don't have to, and don't worry about it because you're going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
You just have to finish the book now. But I think you could use some real like professional advice from people that write. Have you thought about self-publishing?
No, I don't want to.
You don't want to do that. I don't know much about that either.
Yeah.
But I think you should. I think it would be great if you could just get some, I don't know what, but just off my instinct is like, if I was in your shoes, I would call up a couple of editors mm-hmm. at some lesser known publishing companies and say, like, I wrote this book, I'm a professional, this, and I just want to understand how you guys think.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you thought about that?
Yeah. I mean, I know I need to do all that stuff.
Do you not want to do
I
that?
Don't
is
wanna,
that really hard?
I don't want to. I just, it's, that is so different than writing this book.
I know.
That work is not, I understand it's crucial work. I understand it can be creative work to do that.
No,
but
it's
like paperwork to me.
Totally it's like, unpleasant.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like what you don't want to have to deal with. Have you thought about reading about it?
I should probably. Yeah.
Maybe you could do that. Let's go we'll find a book for you. I'm going to talk to some people I know and see what we can, but in the meantime, we got 30 seconds, so I just want to remind you that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you so much for listening.
If you're listening to this on your phone, you can download the app for Android or BlackBerry. They work great, and you can drop by the RadioFreeBrooklyn.org and hit that green donate button, right?
I love that you're doing your job, my job for me.
Yeah.
Hit the green button. I don't use that. Yeah. I gotta get on that. And check me out. I'm on Instagram, Dr. Lisa Levy, SP, stands for self-proclaimed. Or you can check out my artwork on Lisa Levy Artwork. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.